Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
Trust you all had a productive break where you worked really hard. So the plan, the rest of the sort of my part of the course is what I'd like to do is before the test on next, a week from Wednesday, I'd like to be able to finish everything up conceivably in the next couple of days, and then on, or most of it, and then, you know, at least have part of the Monday where we can do review stuff so you guys can ask me questions and we can go from there. That's our plan. So I hope you do that. So last time we were talking about autism, and we finished that up. So we'll talk about, I think this is our last childhood disorder that we'll touch on, which is ADHD. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Many more males than females here. You hear everything from 2-to-1 to 5-to-1 sometimes, depending on what you're reading. So it's more of a male thing than a female thing. This can continue into adulthood. It's quite typical that people either, quote, grow out of it, they'll say, and they won't even show the symptoms anymore. The symptoms, of course, you know, it's basically an inability to focus on anything at one given time, which in then children leads to, if you can't focus on one thing, you run around like a, you know, hyperactively, right? People don't show the symptoms may have actually learned coping strategies just to be able to deal with it, right? It's sort of like if you're hooked up in a certain way, you eventually learn to get by. I don't walk into nearly as many walls as I used to when I was little. I've learned where stuff is in the world. You know, things like that. It's the same kind of thing. But it may be, in fact, that it has continued into adulthood, but people have learned so many strategies that it's like they don't have it anymore. But some people do, and they still have to, say, take medication or whatever, and that works out just fine for them as well. In fact, it's probably the case that something around half of all psychiatric referrals, so these are referrals from MDs to a psychiatrist, roughly half of them are for ADHD. Wow. So it's obviously pretty pervasive, right? It often occurs with comorbid with other disorders such as conduct disorder, okay? I should say OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. It doesn't mean that if you have ADHD, you also are going to have conduct disorder, which is a thing where you start fires, okay, and you become a psychopath. I'm saying that it's more common for people that have this to also have this. It doesn't mean that, and there's got to be somebody, I know there's somebody in this room that has ADHD, the person's told me, but I can also tell you that there are other people in this room that do. It's just chances are. But I don't think that any of you is a psychopath. Maybe eight. Watch her, I'm just saying. That's right, she starts fires, just to let you know. So seriously, okay? When it says things are comorbid, and so that means they happen together, it doesn't mean that you have one, therefore you have the other. You gotta understand that, okay? Often it occurs with anxiety, which explains things like OCD, which is an anxiety disorder. And depression. Now, who knows if one of these grows out of another one or what? I don't know what the deal is there. I don't think anybody does. Right? You can have problems in school, perhaps, right? Which could lead to depression. So it could be going that way. So what's the cause? That's the interesting question. And for us, what's the cause? Neurologically. Well, first of all, it seems like there's a genetic role played here. It's pretty clear that if you look at monozygotic twins versus dizygotic twins, more likely with monozygotic twins to have, for them both to have it. If your parents have ADHD, you're more likely to have ADHD. These kind of things. So it's not surprising there. It's not really, of course, a neuropsychological angle, but there is a biological component to this, of course. is the corpus callosum different in people with ADHD? The data here are equivocal. Sometimes you'll see people say that corpus callosum is too small in people with ADHD compared to normals. So there's less communication. There's less communication. It might be harder for sort of executive functioning, right? To say, focus on this now. But the data aren't entirely clear, so we can't really jump out and say that's it for sure. There's a lack of asymmetry, again, that's been found in some studies. You look at sort of secondary sources here, you look at review articles, they'll usually say, it has been suggested that, which usually is a pretty good indication that it's not a clear choice, a clear thing, okay? But there's a lack of asymmetry in the frontal lobes. We tend to see asymmetries in human brains. And we don't see that as much, again, this has been reported, but it's not seen as much in people with ADHD. So maybe this is just a question of, again, asymmetry tends to show sort of specialization. So it may just be that. There's decreased blood flow in the frontal basal ganglia. Well, let's see, basal ganglia, we've got connections between sort of higher cortical regions and like limbic system. Okay. That makes some sense too. So there's decreased blood flow there. That seems, again, pretty clear, but it's not like, notice the question marks after all of this. No one really knows. There's got to be something, we just don't. It's also conceivable here we have a sort of a suite of disorders. Like a whole bunch of things that present the same kind of symptoms that may be different disorders at the root. That's conceivable. Okay? So what's the deal on this disorder? What about airplane peanuts? Am I right, people? I'm doing Seinfeld. I'm doing Seinfeld. Doing stand-up. Not well, obviously. It's a matter of focusing attention. No matter what the cause is or causes are, or this probably causes, it's a problem with selective attention. There's been stuff done with dichotic listening. You have to listen to two messages, one in one ear, one in the other. Okay? You're supposed to shadow one ear. In other words, you just repeat what's being said, say, in your left ear. Which is actually, for about 10 seconds, really hard. Then it becomes no problem. You just listen. You ignore the other ear. It's a lot harder for people with ADHD. So it seems pretty clear it's about attention. So most models suggest that it's some component of attention or all the components are messed up. In other words, we talked about all those different kinds of attention the other day. It could be all of them. It could just be an executive functioning problem. Where do I put my attention right now? Okay? A lot of people that are against giving drug treatments say that the whole idea here is what we're doing is we're just trying to numb our children. We're trying to give them drugs to calm them down. You give them a stimulant. That should tell you right away that it isn't some conspiracy to keep children quiet. Because if we wanted to do that, we'd give them opium. That'll shut them up. Or codeine. Just load them up with codeine. Just drinks. A couple of drinks. We use stimulants. And if you give someone without ADHD Ritalin, methylphenidate, right? They have real trouble because they can feel their hair growing. Right? We could really just hand out coffee to kids. That would work. So what stimulants do is, in fact, they focus attention. There's really interesting data here. If you take airline pilots and you give them cocaine, they're not a lot. Not so their face goes numb. Right? Like you blow. Is that movie Blow? It's a good movie. See that movie? They actually are a little bit better than simulators at landing airplanes with a small amount of cocaine. It's So we get on the plane, say to the pilot, have you had your cocaine? Because I want the plane to land accurately. No, yeah, please, that can get you a drink. Never say the word cocaine in an airport. Little pro tip from me. But stimulants actually do focus attention. This explains why people drink coffee when they're studying. This is what's explained by smokers. Smokers are doing cognitive vigilance tests. They do better at them when they're smoking. You give methamphetamine, which is Ritalin, to kids, and they actually focus a bit better. You give methamphetamine to kids that don't have ADHD, they're basically like kids on meth. Right? But you're giving a stimulant. That's why it works. And this is something that tells me that it isn't some giant conspiracy. Oh, we're doing is drugging our children. Well, maybe it's that there's some problem with their neurotransmitters and they should be getting the drugs, you know? So, there's been a lot of really weird theories out there. It's all about red dye number 5 and all this kind of crap. But those are things you shouldn't believe. Because they're BS.
I remember back in high school, a bunch of kids used to tell me all the time that smoking weed helped them focus. Is that possible? Or were they just using an excuse?
Smoking weed can't focus and do anything except eat and listen to Pink Floyd. No, and in fact, marijuana does the exact opposite. It does not focus you. One of the problems for those of you that have taken or will take next year a pharmacology course will know or have know about this. And many of you perhaps have experiences with, say, friends who smoke marijuana. knowing that, you know, you can't even carry a conversation on. Right? I think the reason things always seem so deep when you're high is because you forget what the other guy just said. And you hear like 3 words and go, oh, yeah. Those of you listening to me, that is my stoned guy face. How do you know the red that you see is the same red that I see? You know, that one always comes out. So, I mean, the stimulants do that. So, I mean, frankly, and it's a pretty good method. The problem is, if you don't have ADHD, it's not good to take the stimulants. There are side effects of stimulants. Kids that take them have trouble sleeping. They're stimulants. Okay? Dry mouth, things like that. Too much, you get racing thoughts. You don't want that. Right? But, I mean, you take a look at somebody like, there was a lot of attention given to Michael Phelps, partially because, you know, he's an incredible athlete, partially because he has ADHD, and his mother wouldn't let him take the drugs, which is a good thing, because they're a controlled substance, and he wouldn't ever, all those gold medals would have to go back. But she said she got him to focus by having him swim, which is probably not true. He probably was just a really good swimmer. Poor guy takes one bong hit and the whole world goes crazy. And again, I doubt he was doing that because he had ADHD. I think he was at a party and a guy had some weed. So ADHD is a bit of a mystery still. It's almost like, it's a mystery like autism. I think the difference is you don't hear about it as much because frankly, it's not as debilitating. Right, it's not as debilitating. Conclusions here. Some of this stuff's actually pretty sad. You know, things like hydrocephalus and stuff. It can be sad. Though with really early intervention, and this is happening earlier and earlier, with hydrocephalus, if it's really early enough, put a shunt in there, pretty normal life, depending on how much pressure has been in the brain. Same thing with autism. You get a case where, for example, it's getting to the point now where diagnostic tests are being developed for 6-month-olds.
Huh?
6-month-olds for autism. And if you can find that out pretty quickly and intervene pretty quickly with behavioral intervention, you can probably do pretty well. Earlier the intervention happens, the better. Hardest part of some of these disorders, especially something like autism, is people not admitting their kid has autism. Right? And typically, this will typically be the father, though it isn't always, will say, my kid doesn't have any problem. And that stops kids from getting a help day, right?
Dave.
Yep.
How did they screen for autism at 6 months old?
Looking in the eye, things like that. Focusing on, so it's gaze is one of the things to look at. focusing on inappropriate aspects of toys, things like that. There are things that normal kids do, and if they don't do what normal kids do, right? It's pretty easy now, though, around 2.5 to do it. Right? Our son was about 3.5 when he was diagnosed, and you know he's doing okay. Drug treatment is, of course, pretty effective for ADHD. There's lots of hope, especially for ADHD and autism as well. Take a look at Temple Brandon has autism. She's having Asperger's syndrome. She has full-blown autism, and she's got ADHD. Questions about the childhood ones before we move on to the depressing adult part of the course. Not adult in that it's going to get all about sexy and stuff. I mean, adult disorder, trauma.
The following program is not suitable for none of our classes. One of the age of 18.
All right. Let's talk about trauma and some more disorders. Basically, a lot of what we're going to talk about here, in essence, are just lesions. Lesions are just destroyed or damaged brain tissue, right? These can be caused by a lot of different things. Anoxia, hypoxia. Anoxia is a complete lack of oxygen. So the oxygen supply being cut off to a certain region of the brain. Hypoxia is a lot of it being cut off. It's a continuum result. When you get all of it cut off, we stop calling it hypoxia, we call it anoxia. Now, hypoxia can be very small amounts. This can be things like fainting. Right? Anybody ever faint? I have fainting spells. Good times. Haven't had one in 7-8 years. But I know when they're coming and I can sit down and realize, you know. It's like, have you ever stood up too quickly? And you get a little, whoo, yeah. Right? You know what that feels like? So you're like, whoo. Sit down, relax, and be fine. Worst thing you can do is start, you know, now I think I'll go for a run. That'll help. Yeah. But yeah, sometimes I just get those. I haven't had a spell like that where I just feel it coming in a couple of years. It did happen. I think it was last time I taught this course back in 09. And I was talking, and I just stopped, and I stood there, and I said, I'm just going to stand here for a moment. And the world faded back from being purple and black into being normal colors, and everything was fine. Okay. And that's just hypoxia. It can be caused by a lot of things. It happened once. Remember what was that place? The place called You Betcha? Remember that existed? Mm-hmm. Back in the mall years ago? Okay. So I was there. I had one beer. And was there a building in history? No, I've had a beer. No big deal. Just a beer. And I said to him, I said, you know, I told you I faint sometimes? He said, yeah. I said, it's going to happen shortly. I can feel it coming. And I'm going to get really nauseous, because if you ever fainted, you know, you start to get really nauseous. I said, I'm going to have this horrible urge to run to the bathroom to throw up. Don't let me, because I will faint partway to the bathroom, and I will collapse. He said, okay. And I said, okay. So, it started to happen. Oh, you're fading out. And the world hit this cloud. It goes, like I said, purple and black. And you start, there's like an echo when you're hearing. Like, it's really, really creepy. I mean, it's not creepy for me because I know it's coming. I said, oh, it's happening. I really have to go throw up. And, of course, my instructions to him were precise. Do not, under any circumstances, let me walk away. Next thing you know, I wake up, lying on the ground, with a woman yelling about alcohol poisoning to me. I said, I've had one beer, lady. And I looked over and I said, you son of a bitch. I told you. I said, have you ever tried to stop you when you're running? Apparently, he claims. I have no evidence of this because I was asked him. He tried to catch me. It was funny that the paramedics show up.
How long was this?
Well, I usually out for about 9 seconds. 2 minutes. Yeah. First time it happened, I was walking down Bloor Street in Toronto. Went up for some air. I was in a bar, I had one beer, same sort of thing. Looked at my wife and I said, I have to go, I feel really kind of weird. I go up for some air. My jacket on, next thing you know, I'm lying on Bloor Street. like this, I wake up, my glasses are like 10 meters away. I had fallen straight down. Happily, didn't crack my head or anything. Went back in the house, back in the bar, and I said, I just fainted. So, I fell down a flight of stairs once, again, at a bar. I had it again, 1 year. Happily, a friend of mine was with me, was in heat. A guy who was down, it was at a bar called Joe Cole's in London, and I was at the bottom, if you know the bar, which maybe you might have. But you better go upstairs to the bathroom. And then I'm sitting down there, like sort of in a fetal position. Guy said, "Is you okay, buddy?" I said, "No, I just fainted. I have these fainting spells. Can you go up?" There's a guy, he's got really curly hair. He just graduated from medical school. Yell Dr. Schachter. He'll be very impressed by that. So Gord comes in, and I said, "Gord, I fainted. What the hell's wrong with me?" He takes my pulse. He goes, "Well, you seem okay. You fainted." I said, "Okay, so that was your medical school? Way to go." But so it's the paramedic just said, "So what happened is you had a lap." I said, "I know, I teach these courses. I'll sign your waiver." I didn't sign a thing saying that I didn't go to the hospital. Anyway, it happens. Usually some environmental factor. This could be anything from, I don't know. This could be carbon monoxide poisoning, but not to the level, the really high level. This could be like mountain climbing. Right? Don't be climbing the Everest without the mask. This could literally be something like the first time you've been in the mountains, okay? And you do a little bit of exercise, and your body's not used to the atmosphere being thick, okay? It's usually not a big problem. Usually you faint. There might be damage, it's possible. Okay. Now with me, it's the MD that I went to said, because they put a heart monitor on me for a couple of days, the whole thing. They did an MRI of my heart, which was cool. And they said, "Oh, it looks like a textbook. You're fine. It's just," and then we looked at the psychological facts. "It's all just when you're really, really, really stressed out and you haven't eaten." So, okay. I'll make sure to eat from now on and not get stressed.
You're in the right career.
Now, again, those things are typically aren't that big a deal. We can talk about cerebrovascular disorders, things like stroke. That's a little more serious. Cerebrovascular attack, CVA. They used to be basically treated like there was nothing you could do. Someone had a stroke, you just said, "Well, we'll take them to the hospital and we'll wait for the person to die." That was really, honestly, up until maybe 20 years ago, that was the approach. There's very little we can do. This is kind of the way people used to approach a heart attack 67 years ago. Let's hope he gets better. Right? Now, we now view them, well, I shouldn't say we, I'm not an MD, but it's now being viewed more like a brain attack. So intervention is attacked. Now, it depends. This can be a massive attack of some sort. There's nothing you can do, so there are heart attacks like that. This is why you will now see public service ads that say if you're starting to, if you have a very, very bad, if you have a bad, very bad headache, if you have trouble speaking, if you have double vision or blurred vision, get to an emergency room. Because that's an indication that maybe you're having one of these CVAs. Okay, ischemia is cutting off the blood supply to the brain. This is usually short-lived, and this usually involves near complete or complete recovery. This is one kind of CVA, right? Now, the more, if you have one before, a small one, and actually, with the advent of MRIs, it turns out that by the time you're like 60, most of us have little holes. Like, they're small lesions, but many of us, and perhaps 45% of people by the time they hit 60, have had ischemic attacks and they never even knew it. Right? They're just small little things, they go away. If you have had one of these sort of small strokes, you're more likely to get a big one later. Well, it's the same thing again. The heart attack model here is actually pretty similar. If you've had a small heart attack, right? My dad had a small heart attack, for example. enough that he drove himself to the hospital. He was also insane, but that's a whole other matter. But he was, of course, they didn't say, oh, go back, Rick, it's no big deal. Keep smoking and eating fatty food. Right? Don't worry about your cholesterol. They said, you know, now you're more likely to have a bigger one, so be careful. And a lot of times these are caused by very similar things. Right? We've just got fat buildup, right? Plaque buildup in veins and arteries. Right? But in this case, it's on the way to the brain. Very typically, when people are having a stroke or have just had one, their speech is impaired. In fact, even if the where it was cut off, even if the ischemic episode had nothing to do with Broca's area, it could be like right frontal or something, as far away as you can get from Broca's area. Very common for people to have trouble with speech right away. So again, if your father, mother, grandmother, grandfather, somebody you meet in the street, whomever, has a stroke, right afterwards, they're going to have real trouble speaking. Don't immediately think, oh man, they're never going to speak again. They may very well have vision problems. Right? And oftentimes you'll see things like neglect for a short period of time. Neglecting one visual field, things like that, we've talked about. You think about it, these are very complex things we do, and frankly, if you're taking one part of your brain and saying, oh, you can't work for a while, we're gonna just cut off all your blood for a while, it's going to affect the whole system. Right? If I just opened up your computer and pulled out a stick of RAM, part of it isn't going to work for a while. Everything's probably going to be fine, but you're probably going to have to reboot. Right? Yeah, I'll show you. This is kid. I'm going to get a whole full effect here. Now, an infarction, which is basically, which are caused by blockages reaching the brain, are caused by a blockage in a blood vessel called thrombosis, which you can get. This is one of those things you hear about. You ever been on a transatlantic flight, and they say, make sure you keep moving around a bit. And it's great, because now they strap you to your seat and say you can never move. But there's little exercises you can do, just flex your legs a little bit, every so often, move around a little bit. Because what can happen, if there's no activity here in your legs, is you can end up with, you get this deep vein thrombosis. Your blood just sort of pools there. And then it clots. Clotting's good. Because if you're bleeding, you want it to clot. However, if it's just a whole bunch of blood sitting there and it clots, then you've got what's called thrombosis. A friend who actually, on his way to a job talk in Cleveland, at Case Western Reserve, where he's now an adjunct professor, and he runs a biotech company, which is kind of cool, he was going to give his job talk, and he got this. And he went to give his job talk, but before that, he went to the hospital where they did a little zipper job. They opened him up and found the blood clot was moving to his heart. But they dealt with it. But I mean, this was this can happen to anybody. This guy who's 38 years old is in pretty good shape. So when you're on a plane, just move your legs around a little bit. Now, we can get what's called an embolism when that clot moves and gets to your brain. This can be very serious, and this quite often can kill you. Gets to your heart, it'll kill you. Gets to your brain, it'll almost certainly kill you. Like this is bad. Because then we're just cutting off everything, right? Because what's it going to do? It's going to go to your leg, and it's going to go up, and it's going to get, the carotid artery. Oh, good, no blood to anywhere in the brain. That's bad. And then basically, it's fat type buildups in arteries, but it can also happen just from sitting still for too long, a long period of time. Not an hour and 10 minutes in class. Don't just start moving around saying, I'm just trying not to get a brain attack. you do that way you watch an early big crap, you won't see it anyway. Yes?
So what is the technical difference between a ischemic attack and an infarction?
Oh, these can all be, excuse me, ischemia can be caused by infarction. But when we say ischemic attack, they tend to be quite often a lot more localized. know, for example, when like I said, it starts in your leg, they do like an angiogram for your heart or an angioplasty. They go in through your leg, right? Right? So when they put the stent in, when they go in with it, first they go in with a camera and find the blockage, and then they follow that up with something else that brings in the little balloon and pushes all the plaque to the side of the artery. They go in through your leg. They don't just go in here. This is why they clamp you down, because of course you got so much blood there, it's gonna take a while to clot. They don't want you moving then. And they did that to my father. They clamped him down. Apparently my dad looked at the guy and said, "Where'd you get those? Home Depot?" Because he said they just looked like the kind of clamps they use for carpentry. Put a big plate here, they just clamp your head and clamp down your legs. Like, you can't move for 6 hours or you die. You tend to take that pretty seriously. But yeah, they'll just open your leg. So you can see it's going to be very similar to the same sort of problem you have with a heart attack, right? Now, it can also get what's called a hemorrhage. This is just a rupture of an artery, and then it just spills blood into the brain. Now, typically what's going to happen here is, if they can close it up, they do, you might think they're going to suck all the blood out. They actually don't tend to. The glial cells take care of that. It's usually caused by a weak spot, which is what's in an artery or vein, which is called an aneurysm. So people say someone's had an aneurysm. Actually, the aneurysm is the part that breaks. You can have an aneurysm in your arm. I've got one in my leg, actually. You can see how this could be dangerous. First of all, you get a lack of blood flow to parts of the brain, and you've also got all this pressure from the liquid, from the blood, just putting pressure on the brain itself. You can get what is intracerebral, so within the brain, or you can get one that's called subarachnoid. There's the arachnoid layer, which is basically on top of the brain, but below the meninges. That's not going to be quite as bad as intracerebral. Intracerebral is going to be pushing from inside out. This is going to be pushing from the outside in a little bit more. I'm not saying this is good. You don't want any of these. Right?
But it's probably more treatable.
It's probably going to be a little bit... Because what's going to happen here is you're going to have... It's going to bleed all over and push down a little more uniformly than from here, where it's within the brain, it's going to just push out. Okay? Yeah, none of them are good. But again, these are things that brain hemorrhages now, people have them, and they end up recovering. My grade 9 science teacher was teaching us one day, the next day he was dead. He was 31 years old. He was playing pickup hockey. He had brain hemorrhage from an aneurysm, and he just died in the ice. This can happen to anybody. My buddy Richard, his father, this was a guy in very good shape, too. This was a guy who was a former professional football player, who was sought after by the Los Angeles Rams, the Baltimore Colts, and the Toronto Argonauts. And actually, started with Toronto because in the 1960s, the CFL paid better than the NFL. He's a hell of a football player. He was in great shape, and he was able to walk. He said he had a headache, went and walked his dog, and died. Right? And now again, if you have a stabbing headache like you've never had before, you go to the doctor. Right. So Rich's dad died, Mr. Spicer, my science teacher, died. These were guys in good shape. Yeah, like,
do you have a lot of morning time?
It really depends. Sometimes you'll have none. Apparently with Mr. Spicer, who's my science teacher. I guess I was 13 or whatever. But with him, apparently, he just got back to the bench and collapsed. With Rich's father... If I understand correctly, he complained of a very bad headache. Walked the dog, he actually came home and lied down from this very bad headache, and he just never woke up. So it really depends. Just like a heart attack. Like some people just have a massive heart attack and die right there. Other people have a kind of heart attack like my dad had, which is this feels like really bad heartburn. Okay? So it's pretty varied. But if you get the warning signs, right, if you get the double vision or blurred vision, you get the trouble speaking, or you get the feeling dizzy and faint, and a bad headache. If you get a couple of those at once, you really should get yourself to a doctor. And believe me, you know they talk about waiting times in emergency rooms? If you walk in and say, let's say you can't talk, this person brings you in and says, he's got a really bad headache and he can't speak. The guys that have the sniffles, they don't go in yet. Don't worry, you get served pretty quick. Good. It's a turn attack. Okay, that was no good at all. Let's say you're diagnosed with serious cancer, not a problem. Transient ischemic events, that's what a TIA is. The diagnosis here, why this happened, and even where, can be pretty tough. Transient ischemic attacks, rather. This can be almost anything. You know, it's like, frankly, in essence, when someone faints, it's a very mild version of this. Right? It's a very mild version of this. Hemorrhages are pretty easy to diagnose. Right? The outlook isn't nearly as good as it is with a small TIA. Of course, nowadays, what they'll do almost right away is they'll get you an MRI. Or even a CAT scan. MRI's better. And it's pretty easy to see, oh yeah, well, there's a hemorrhage here. If there's nothing to see, right, it's like, well, it's probably just a transient ischemic attack. We'll keep you here for observation, do some neurological tests, sort of behavioral ones. It's probably nothing to worry about. Now, on the psychological angle, post-event, and that's whatever that event may be, very common to have sensory issues here. This shouldn't surprise you. I mean, you've got parts of your brain that are, I mean, especially the sensory cortex or something, but I'm talking about like they'll poke you with the pins and sort of dermatome-type tests. So it's quite common to have sensory problems there. Could also be visual problems, hearing. It could be understanding things but not putting them together very well. All kinds of things like that. So sensory problems are pretty common. I just got updated by a trade deadline. It's a trade deadline. I've got the TSN Trade Center app on my phone. It sends me notifications. Nobody, don't worry. Unless anybody here a big Florida Panthers or Atlanta Thrashers fan? Yeah, no one cares? It's going to be cognitive issues. This may be very simple things like vigilance, things like that. Okay, pretty basic stuff. Attention. Okay? Excuse me.
Saying the wrong words when you mean something.
Well, that's going to be under speech in a second, but yeah. Memory problems, very typical that they're not going to remember the event very well. This shouldn't surprise you. It's hard to consolidate memories when the blood flow is being cut off to your brain. Jeez. Motor problems are pretty common. Now, again, this may be, doesn't matter really where, and it doesn't mean you're always going to get all these, but this may have nothing to do with where your damage was or where the attack was. Okay. So, speech problems, Sarah was saying, you know, naming objects, ability to put sentences together, right? Just ability to speak in general. You may see something like people trying to speak, but they can't, so you'll see lip moving like it. Okay, so like almost a fish kind of, if you want to call it that, I don't know. There's probably a name for it, so we'll know. But you see that kind of thing? Sort of lip smacking? Try to speak, but they can't. Abstract reasoning can take a little while, as you can probably imagine. This may take weeks, it may take months, it may never come back. But abstract reasoning, you would use something like, you know, if A is greater than B and B is greater than C, tell me what the relationship between A and C, right? The transitive property. Just three simple things that we can all do. Even if you never learned about the transitive property in school, you know that implicitly, right? So it's not always associated with where the event happened. I mean, where in the brain. You've had a massive insult, right? So it's going to be difficult on so many levels to do a lot of these things. Now, you're not necessarily going to get all these things. Speech, very common. Memory, almost always. Very common to have sensory problems. Abstract reasoning, sometimes it's hard to tell if it's because of the inability to speak. But you know, do things with pen and paper, and then you have to see, can they actually see properly, right? All right, questions so far? Move on to tumors. This is so much fun today. All right, tumors can be malignant or benign. Benign tumors aren't nice, by the way. Malignant tumors are cancer. Benign tumors are still tumors, at least they're cancer. A brain tumor is bad. Even if it's a benign brain tumor, it is bad for you. Now, you may have a much better chance of living through this. Right? It's still not good. Brain tumors can be infiltrative or encapsulated. Encapsulated tumors, just like they sound, are a solid mass. An infiltrative tumor is one that's spreading out. It spreads out like tentacles, sort of. That's a lot worse, right? If you want to remove something, say surgically, none of it's easy. It's a lot easier to take that out than there's one that's spread.
Would the infiltrate one be more likely to metastasize?
Yes. Yeah, and you get metastasized cancer, which just means the cancer goes throughout your body.
Dave.
Yes.
So usually, do we call like infiltrative tumors more cancer generally, and then?
You can have benign tumors that are encapsulated and don't know about infiltrative benign tumors.
So what would be an example of an infiltrative tumor?
Oh, it is cancer.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But like, do we know that it's referred to as cancer?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So like leukemia would be...
Oh, no. This is just brain tumors.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. These are way easier to diagnose now with MRIs and CAT scans. Right? Than they used to be. It used to be people would show up at a hospital after having what looked like a TIA, and they'd die in a couple of weeks because they had a brain tumor the size of a grapefruit in their head. Whoops. It doesn't happen as much anymore. Still happens. You got to understand that brain cancer is one of the most rare forms of cancer of all of them. And it's also not caused by cell phones.
What about microwaves?
No! Non-ionizing radiation cannot cause cancer. And MSG doesn't hurt you, and aspartame's fine. Put MSG in your Diet Coke while talking on your cell phone, and microwave your popcorn. Nothing is going to happen to you. I don't think it's probably going to be that tasty. I'm just saying. Basically, these are treated with radiation. Attempts can be made to remove them. Typically, they don't want to do that. Typically, your neurosurgeons, your neuro-oncologist is going to not want to open someone's head up if they can avoid it. They'll open someone's head up to a biopsy, of course. We'll talk about a case study in a second. But they never really want to open up the whole head and take something out if they can avoid it. Right? If you can kill it with radiation, much easier. and chemo. So the thing is, like, radiation's pretty direct. Chemo is pretty strange because, in fact, I don't know how this works, but typically chemotherapy works by destroying DNA. Right? Tumors grow fast, so what you're doing is you're destroying everything, but you're destroying tumor faster than the rest of your body. This is why chemotherapy isn't fun.
So chemo is basically poisoning your entire body.
Yes. Yes. But if you have a fast-growing tumor, in fact, it's good for chemo, because the faster it grows, the more it's going to wreck the DNA of the tumor. Right? As I said, the best when the tumor's growing. So early detection is really the key, because it's going to grow fastest early on. And the problem is, detection of brain tumor is not the easiest thing to do early on, because people tend to, they tend to happen in older people. And, you know, you might be like just general cognitive slowing. Oh, I got a memory problem for some reason today. And people just ignore it, right? They're old people, typically. They aren't always, but very typically, older people. And it's like, oh, it's just general cognitive slowing. I wouldn't worry too much. Okay, here's a case study. This is the case of RB. Pretty good health except for heart attack in 1995. I was 64 years old. Not 1995. 1995, I think mid-50s. Retired December 31st, 2007. And on January 2nd, 2008, had a seizure and was admitted to the hospital. A typical thing in this case, inability to speak, but attempting to speak and doing this. Still could tie his shoes. Couldn't say a word. Basically, the person saw this and said, we got to get you to the hospital. CAT scan showed a tumor in the primary auditory association cortex. And that's right there. And you can see how important that problem is. Auditory association cortex, right here, 41 and 42 Broadman. Those are all these different numbering conventions. I don't know why. 17, 18, 19, back here, for example. I think Broadman led random numbers. Okay, so. But anyway, this is roughly where the tumor was. And if I'm not mistaken, that's about the size it was when it was found. Okay, so what we have here, we're in your Hessian gyrus, so you have a problem basically putting things together, auditory association, putting information together, auditory information. So this is where the damage was, where the tumor was. So there were initial problems, basically memory issues, and it was mostly semantic memory originally, not episodic memory. Episodic memory is memory about what this person did that day. It was semantic memory, inability to name two of the Beatles. The drummer, I put that in air quotes because it is Ringo after all, and George Harrison, could name Paul McCartney and John Lennon. They wrote the songs for that. There were, now looking back, when the neurologist talked to family, found out that, in fact, there were other symptoms that really all pointed to a neural issue that no one ever picked up on. Because they're, again, typical things that happen to older people. For example, just weird things like, oh, that just went into my head. That's weird. Numbness on the right hand. Left brain, right hand. Oh, that's it. Micrographia. Micrographia is really small handwriting. Much smaller than it used to be. And messy. Messy to the point where couldn't read it because it was too small. Knew what he was writing, but then couldn't read it because it was too small. Kind of like, you know, if you've ever seen Kyle Corbett's handwriting. I hate to think anybody would get micrographia. This usually means brain tumor, but Kyle with micrographia, I don't know what would be going on at that point. Head of a kin? Little joke for part of the room that knows Kyle's handwriting. Having marked many of his tests, I could give him. I could give Kyle one piece, of, like a post-it note, and he could write. I bet he next year he'd probably lose honors because on a post-it note. So basically, this all abated, as they typically do. Which again, indicated. Oh, what we have here is a TIA. Right. This must be a TIA because everything. Typically, that's what it is. If it wasn't, but brain tumors are exceedingly rare. So it's like this must be. Probably a TIA, but we should go in there. There's something in there. There's a tumor of some sort. There's some sort of damage. We've got to go find out what it is. But everything abated and Arden went home. Waiting for a biopsy. Basically, the biggest things that were done right away were steroids were given. Steroids reduce swelling. Okay, so when you take a lot of steroids, what happens there? You end up with fewer, less swelling of the tumor. And less swelling of the brain in response to the tumor being there, so it controls some of the symptoms. There's downsides of steroids, of course. They screw with your immune system, right? Basically, RV lived completely normally. Everything was the same as it ever was. Had a few memory problems. Actually, exercised daily, walking a kilometer or two each day. You know, old guy. Retired. If I'm going to say, I just retired, I should start walking, because that's what old people do. Right? Had what's called an absence seizure while walking to Best Buy with his son to buy RAM. It's my father. And we were walking to Best Buy, and that looked at me and said, it's happening. I said, what? He said, you know that thing? I said, oh, you're having an absence seizure. And my mom's looking at me. She said, what's wrong? I said, he's having a seizure, Mom. It's okay. He'll be fine. But he was gone for 45 seconds. I said, I think we're going to call you a cab, and I'm going to go get my RAM. But the funny thing was, by the time he got home, I had trouble. I always had trouble because, you know, I don't see well. And I said, Dad, can you do this for me? Open up my laptop, put the RAM in, no problem. And he was fine with it. In fact, he even went back to work. He didn't really want to retire, so he went back to the store he used to run. He used to own, and he used to run. He retired from. He actually went back and didn't work for a couple of days. But then he had an absence seizure. He was talking to a customer, and he went, I got to sit down. But he was living really normal. Sometimes that was grasping for words. So there was, this was early on, this is January. He couldn't, like he'd be like, almost like a Shatner thing. You know, that kind of thing? But he'd be doing a lot of it. This upset him in some respect, but he was actually pretty upbeat. Generally. I'm not saying he was happy about this, but I remember him saying things like, so I won't live to be 85. Who gives a shit, as my father said. So, RB, as my dad, was diagnosed with a glioblastoma, which is a tumor of glial cells. Most are. Typically what you get is a glioblastoma or a glioma. When you get a meningioma, that's a different kind of brain tumor. That's not nearly, I'm not saying it's a happy brain tumor. But it's a lot easier to take out, to remove, basically, with radiation. It tends to just be sitting on top of that brain bag, the meningioma. It was a really aggressive tumor. It was growing very fast. When they found it, as I said, it was about that size. It did get to be about the size of a softball. Now, that was awake during the, of course, the biopsy procedure, as you are. Awake and drugged up like crazy. So this was about a week later. So it was this January 2nd when I got the phone call from my mom saying, what do you think's going on? And I said, I think it's a TIA, probably not working. Because it's much more likely that was what it was. Then we found out it was the tumor. And then got biopsy in a week. And I kept saying to my mom, don't worry, it doesn't make a difference. They know what they're doing. And he then started chemo and radiation. late January 2008, the tumor hemorrhage. Tumors have a blood supply, which oddly enough, about 20 years ago, was a controversial idea.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do. So what's going to happen here, of course, because things grow so damn quickly, they're usually pretty fragile things. So the tumor hemorrhage, he was at, just after he came home from watching his grandson, my nephew, Aiden, play hockey. The pressure from the tumor actually moved my dad's corpus callosum to the right by 5 centimeters. It was that much blood released into his brain. This was, I think, probably about January, somewhere in the 20s in January. Yeah. A neurology resident who my mother described as a cross between House and Hitler gave my dad between two hours and 2 weeks to live. Because basically, I mean, it was, now, they didn't know this yet, right? But they knew it was a hemorrhage. They didn't know how far it moved over. They did scan him and saw that, you know, it was just spilling blood. It was like, he's going to die. So he actually didn't die right away. I never met my father. So there he is. I can't really see him. It's too bad. He's just sitting there doing this. No. That's about 4 days later. He woke up. The first word he said was, fuck. I guess he was my father. And if that offends you, I don't give a shit. I'm quoting my father. And he was wondering what he was doing there, but he was okay. I mean, okay-ish. He had brain hemorrhage. Well, tumor hemorrhage. That's even worse. This is, now we're talking, it's early January. He should be dead. This should have killed him. Later on, he continued to have speech issues and word confusion. So, first was problems, this is as the tumor's growing. Even though he's doing chemo, they had gotten back on the chemo, obviously. The first thing he had to do was stabilize it, make sure he wasn't going to die right away. Then they want to get him back on the chemo and radiation. So he continued to have speech issues and a lot of word confusion. I think I pulled some of you guys in here in other classes, maybe, that because I was going down there a week or two. And he would get, he would say words perfectly, but they were the wrong words. So shoes became walnuts. He'd say, where are my walnuts? Hamburgers were Mustangs. And he said, when I was making hamburgers one night, the Mustangs had too much English. The hamburgers were too thick. And I said, the hamburgers are too thick? He said, yeah, the Mustangs have too much English. I said, okay, so Mustangs are hamburgers. Right. And I think I told you that I'm trying to ask how to print an email, and it was, how do I get a Coke out of this pop machine? And then when my mom talked, came on the computer and said, how do we print one of the emails? My dad goes, yes! Get a Coke from the pop machine! Oh, so he wants to get a Coke. Okay, gotcha. So she had a lot of word confusion. Some motor issues, very few. He was walking. You know, everything was, he wasn't in great shape, but he was doing pretty well. He was actually more active than he was when he had his heart attack 10 years earlier. Okay? 12 years earlier. He had blind sight, which I told you about, where he couldn't recognize faces in his right visual field. Yes. But he could eye track my finger, which was quite cool. One thing was done in April of 2008, he had what was called a debulking operation. This is done typically, they typically don't do this. They typically want to go in and kill it with radiation or chemo. They don't want to open your head up if they can avoid it. Basically, this was done, the neurosurgeon went in and he was amazing. He was really good. It was good too because I could talk to him, we could talk brain, and then I could translate for my family. Because, you know, he would say things. We'd have a meeting after the operation. He was talking, and he would say stuff, and I said, okay, so what did you, and then I said, I'll explain it to them later. So it was actually good for both of us. I went and looked him up, read a couple of his papers. The guy knows what he's doing. It was super. So they took out, this is an 8-hour operation. 8-hour operation. He literally, like, the father literally woke up paranoid, which is not uncommon for people that have had very long operations and have been under a very long period of time, especially, no one really knows why, by the way. But I read some articles on this when this happened, especially heart patients and brain patients. They wake up very confused and very often paranoid. I think when you look at it from their perspective, you wake up, especially a brain patient, you wake up, you're not going to have any memory for the event. The reason you had this is because something bad's happened. You're already having trouble putting things together, and you wake up and you've got tubes coming at you. It's like you're being assimilated by the Borg. You know, it's kind of scary. So I kind of understand it. And that was when I think I spoke to this as well. He was very upset. He said to me, "Boy, I'm not sure." He was struggling to get the words out. I said, "There are people trying to help you." "No, no, no." I said, "Look at the bruise." And he points to the bruise in his arm. And I said, "Hey, idiot, that's because you ripped an IV out of your arm like 5 times. He goes, "No, no, hang on a sec, yes." So that shows a couple of things. First of all, he did have a memory of doing that. And he also, you think of, "Oh, hang on a sec." Now, that's really one word. When you think about it, right? Saying, "Hang on a sec." It was an expression my dad used all the time. "Hang on a sec." It was just something he always said. So that may seem like it's a lot of words, but really, when you think about it diagnostically, it was a single word. So I was really surprised by this, but then the doc said to me, "This happens all the time, don't worry about it. Here's some papers you can read about this. We don't know why it happens, but it happens." I read them and I said to my mom, "That's okay, it's normal." He had another really bad week. Like, this was all touch and go. I was flying back down and back up here and always worried. But then things suddenly improved. This was in April. It was pretty cool, in fact, because he was... this was the Canadians were making a bit of a playoff run, and he was pretty happy with that. He would sleep all day, and we'd show up at the hospital, me and my brother and my brother-in-law, and we turned a little TV on. And as soon as he heard the national anthem, I kid you not, he would stand up for the national anthem. And then he wouldn't know who many of the players were. Who the 27? I said, "Dad, it's Alex Kovalev. He's played for us for 5 years." "No, Rangers." I said, "Dad, he was traded to us 5 years ago." "Okay. 31. Carey Price, Dad. He's our new goalie." "What? What? Leafs losing? I didn't make the playoffs." So actually, got to the point, he was in the hospital for a while. He actually went back home in mid-May. To the point, literally, there was a time. The idea here was to give Dad, as he thought he was going to die, a normal life, even if only for a short period. Which he did. Which was very cool. This would not be, quote, medically necessary. He has a pre-existing condition called a brain tumor. And in our neighbor to the south, except now under the new horrible, evil, socialized Obamacare, he wouldn't have gotten this operation because it's not medically necessary. It wouldn't prolong his life. I'm sure it didn't.
It just made the quality of it a lot better.
Yeah. When I asked the doc, I said, "You ever work in the States?" He said, "Yeah, sure. The big money is, of course, I worked in the States for a while." I said, "Why not? Why not anymore?" He said, "Because this wouldn't be covered by your insurance. And this is about $250,000 operation I just did." "Oh!" So he said, "Yeah, I'd rather be back in Canada." Gotta use it again. So he got about a week and a half, literally, to be almost normal. It was startling how normal he was. I was talking to him on the computer, except for the fact that he had, no hair from the chemo, which strangely suited him. Because it was growing back in. It was looking good. And he had staples in his head. He literally had staples in his head. Right? Oh, sorry, wrong side. Because when he woke up, we were down there just after the operation, he had a couple weeks later, visiting the hospital, and he's scratching his head. I said, "Just grab his hand. Stop it!" It's funny how the kid becomes the parent when you're the parent gets really sick. He said, "What?" I said, "Dad, you have staples in your head." "No." Took my phone out, took a picture, said, See, that was holy shit. Yeah, for a time, they actually had him restrained. Like, funny thing happened when he was, when he would order food, he would say, he would order everything in the menu. Because he was hungry from the steroids, because the steroids made you want to eat. So he was literally ordering like two of everything. And he was finishing it, which can't be good for him. He was like, I don't really care, but he had all his menu cards filled out. He had the whole thing all checked. I said, Dad, we're going to do these again. You don't even like peas. He said, oh, love them. No, you don't hate peas. I've known you for 45 years. Or wasn't that 43 years. You hate peas. Oh, no, no. Oh, brain fence? Oh. No, you don't hate peas. He was ordering bowls of gravy for no apparent reason. It was really quite interesting to watch him. He also, I mean, like, it was funny how some of the memory, the sort of semantic memory, was gone. When I visited in November, or sorry, in February, I'm a pretty good cook. It's a hobby. And I said, oh, I'll cook you dinner one night. I said, it's mom's birthday, and, you know, I don't think you're going out anywhere. So I'll cook dinner. And he said to my brother, apparently, you know, like, David can't die. He can't. No. I'll just tell him, shit. And said, Dad, he's kind of an amateur gourmet cook. No! Yeah, well, kind of him. So he forgot stuff. But yeah, after a week, and a half of him being pretty normal, we visited again in May. This was at the end of May. I guess it was in the 31st of May. And on June 2nd, we have to move up to that. But he had actually a week. The last time I was with him, he was having the word confusion. He was saying things like, he couldn't remember that my wife's name is Isabel. But he couldn't remember the word wife, so he made up a term called fake mother. He said, go in there with your fake mother and make me a drink. I don't care what it is, even if it's a dirty foot. So we invented a drink called a dirty foot, my brother-in-law. But actually, he was asking, probably meant a rusty nail, which was a drink that we never drank. My dad never drank scotch. So let's see if you can see that there. I want you to see that because it's freaking cool. All right, see? Oh, you can't see it. Here, maybe I'll show you on the computer. Because my father was cremated. He doesn't have a gravestone. But if you go to the Centennial Place at the Bell Center, it says, in memory of a true Habs fan. Rick Broadback, 1943 to 2008. So, which is pretty cool, because I get to go there every year and say, just see that. It's pretty awesome. We can talk more about this if you have any questions. And you can ask them. I wouldn't have sat here and told you all about this if I didn't want you to ask the questions. Just start with my son. So we'll do that next time because we're out of time. Thanks, guys. Miss you, Dad.
You say that you know it, but today won't say what tomorrow will be. That I showed it. I guess it's front row. Wait, watch, you'll see. And if you say that you love me tomorrow is too late. I need you to say that you. Over, poke a stick at me just to see I'm alive. clown, and now flying trapeze. But I know what a jerk is. I'd look up at you, but the light makes me sneeze. Me and my girlfriend, as wonderful as it was, as the background there's a waterbed. Me and my girlfriend, still a little sad love, in the background there's a photograph instead. And if you say that you
podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.